Galatians 5:13 out of the Bible said, "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love." And then Ram Dass said, "When you go into the woods and you look at trees, you see all of these different trees, and some of them are bent, and some of them are straight, and some of them are evergreens, and some of them are whatever. And you look at the tree, and you allow it. You appreciate it. You see why it is the way it is. You sort of understand that it didn't get enough light, so it turned that way. And you don't get all emotional about it. You just allow it. You appreciate the tree. The minute you get near humans, you lose all that. And you're constantly saying, 'You're too this,' or 'I'm too this.' That judging mind comes in. And so I practice turning people into trees, which means appreciating them just the way that they are." My name is Rick Alexander, and I host the Morning Coffee podcast. And today I want to talk to you about why maybe the best way to approach this life is to begin to take yourself out of the equation. Before I get into the show, I just want a quick mention of two things, one for me and one for you. As always, if this podcast is helping you think a little differently, or maybe if it's helping you work through some things in your own life, it would mean the world to me if you would give us a review on iTunes or tell anyone you think might benefit from the message. And then secondly, if you would like to work through these things in your own life and you want to do it in person, the Clarity Academy 2-day workshop in Denver, Colorado kicks off on March 14th and 15th. If you're ready to peel some of these layers back in your own life and begin to ask yourself some of the really tough questions that growth requires, I do believe this will be a life-changing event. So hit me up at @RickAlexander_ or at the Morning Coffee Podcast to learn more about it. Without further ado, on to the show. You are the first thing that you ever learned to separate out from the rest of the known universe. And although you don't remember, you can imagine that before you had the knowledge of self, you were bound to pure awareness. You just were. Before long, however, you learn that you're separate from everything that you see. This began the formation of your ego. You learn that you have a name, and that name denotes everything that is encapsulated within the self. We then spend the rest of our lives trying to figure out exactly what the hell that really means. If we aren't careful, this quest for identity and trying to figure out who we are can turn into a form of self-obsession. From that point forward, we become the stars of our own movies. We play the main character in every scene that we find ourselves in. When we give advice, we're thinking of ourselves, talking of what we think we would do if we were in that same situation. When we see people on the street, we see them with either envy or disgust. But regardless of how we see them, we are the litmus test to which everyone else is measured. If we don't like a song or a movie, it's easy to lay out a case to try and convince others of what we think as we try to validate our own opinions. It's very hard for us as humans to understand that something can be different without being better or worse. We find that all the tools that technology give us end up being a further extension of our never-ending quest to figure out and define the self. Simply look at the obsession with a selfie. We are one part blown away with mystery, one part enthralled with discovery, and yet another part completely infatuated with self. In fact, many modern thinkers, such as media mogul Gary Vaynerchuk, have said that what social media has given us is a mirror to our society. What that mirror has revealed is that we're all a bit more narcissistic than any of us would like to think. What we find on our quest inward is that the target is elusive. The very magnitude of our own depth forces us to have context whenever we try to answer the question, who are we, really? If I were to ask you, for example, you'd have to know in what context do I mean. You are who you are at work. You are who you are at home. You are who you are in the gym. In fact, I've heard it said that there are as many versions of you as there are people who know you. We're always trying to be who we think we need to be to survive certain situations or perhaps even to thrive. We'll take on the archetype of the driven boss, for example, when we need to get things done or perhaps to make us feel safe and keep others inferior to us. When our own theory of mind fails us and we're unable to be seen for who we think that we are, we'll take on the identity of the misunderstood, because in our minds, even the misunderstood are understood as something. And what we really can't stand or tolerate is having our own existence shunned by others. Better to be known as something rather than nothing. What I'd like to posit is the fact that our default settings may not be the best way to move through life. Perhaps our intentions are pure, but the way we are framing them is giving us cause for concern. Maybe it would be more beneficial for everyone involved if we began to look at ourselves in relation to others instead of who they are to us. The ego is a part of our personality that knows I. It is the very first part of our personality that is developed, and so you know that son of a bitch is strong. It's made of decades of patterning and conditioning. It knows I and then everything else. So when we see people through this lens, we identify them as who they are to us. As long as we look through the ego, for example, we don't see the girl that is struggling. We see the ex-girlfriend that let us down. We don't see the man that is trying to keep himself safe while keeping his children safe. We see the father that was too strict or rigid in his beliefs. We don't see our friends' cries for help because they're the strong one. It's us who need the help after all. We see people in relation to us, and when we do, we miss part of the truth. We tend to see what is happening to us, not what is happening to the whole of which we are a part. It is often only after we go through some extreme level of suffering that the ego dies off for a while and we find ourselves humbled by what we're a part of. Last year, I had the honor of officiating one of my best friend's wedding. As the day got closer and closer, I felt what I could only describe as performance anxiety. I began to convince myself that I was going to screw up their big day. I convinced myself that their family was never going to forgive me. As I thought more and more about why I couldn't do it, I found that I had no idea what to say either. You guys, I can't express how badly I was gripped by anxiety in the weeks leading up to this wedding. When I showed up in Vegas 2 days before the ceremony, I didn't have a goddamn thing written down. I had no idea what I should say, and worse, as I thought about it more, I realized I wasn't ready, I wasn't capable, I wasn't... And then, the first night in Vegas, I had a realization. All of this pressure on myself had constructed a prison that left me incapable of movement. It was all about me, and that's far too much weight for one human to carry around constantly. Yet how many of us are? I had made the biggest day of someone else's life entirely about myself. It is the focus on self that forms the roots which allow performance anxiety to grow. When we're passionate about something and that passion begins to be directed toward ourselves and not on the endeavor, our insecurities are instantaneously highlighted. As I laid in bed for my second night of no sleep, I had the insight that led me out of the prison I had constructed around myself. As I went back and forth across my mind, one voice became louder than all of the back and forth. This day, this ceremony, this event has absolutely nothing to do with you. You're able to be part of it, and in order to do that, all you have to do is play your role. There is no pressure that exists beyond that, and for most of our lives, this is always true. It's when we see things in relation to ourselves that we put pressure on both those things and ourselves. But we weren't meant to carry this pressure. And in fact, our life seems to be much better when we recognize this. The nature of our awareness, the fact that we see the world in relation to ourselves, causes us to miss the truth. But if we can see the whole, if we can appreciate the beauty, we realize that we don't have the responsibility to carry the weight of the entire thing. What we have is the unique gift to appreciate the fact that we're part of it all. All of nature knows that all it must do is play its part. Trees, for example, exhale so that we can inhale, but they don't contain the kind of awareness that makes them believe they have to be something else, something that they're not. And we're lucky for this. Humans are the benefactor of an entire universe of constituents that play their role in perfect harmony. The result of all of this, the circulation of air, the formation of an atmosphere, the clouds which circulate the planet's life source, is that we get to experience life on Earth. The unique human gift is that we get to appreciate that experience. It is our self-obsession that often robs us of that experience and that appreciation. What I believe is that we're here to do the human thing well. We can talk of an afterlife. We can speculate on the parts of ourselves that seem transcendent. We can meditate on one philosophy versus another. But any theory of the universe that cuts us off to our own humanity, it seems, does us an injustice. Maybe we are trying to save our souls. Maybe we are working for an afterlife. Or maybe after this is the relief of nothingness. But in any case, those things always lead us back to the realization that we're here to do the human thing well. When Jesus himself was asked, which is the greatest commandment? He said to love God and love people. When you get in touch with your own humanity, you're led to the realization that the most important thing in the world are the other people you're experiencing this life with. You can fool yourself into chasing the money. You can fool yourself into thinking that you'll get this time back again. But eventually, someone will get sick. someone else will die. And as long as you are one of the ones that remain, you'll be reminded of what truly matters. And for some reason, we're hardwired in a way that our highest expression is in our love to others. We feel an undeniable expansion of self when we commit ourselves to servitude. And so maybe the root of that is selfish. Maybe it comes back to save our own souls. But what I would submit is that no matter what, you will always come back to the fact that we're here for others, that this life isn't about us, after all. And so perhaps our never-ending quest to decode our own mystery should be looked at differently. Perhaps we should not see others in relation to us, but see ourselves in relation to the whole. Maybe if we commit to playing the absolute best role that we can, we'll find the highest version of ourselves. Maybe the imposter syndrome and the resistance we feel to playing the role in life that we feel called to is because we're focusing on the creator and not the creation. If we look through the lens of ego, we see a creator with flaws. We see a human incapable of changing the world. When we look through the lens of the whole, of which we are a part, we see where our creation is necessary. Indeed, this podcast will not be for everyone. It's possible that as I delve into existential matters that I'll lose some listeners, or that my own theory of the universe will be too incompatible with others, and for that, I won't get the numbers that I'm hoping for. But if you dissect your own concerns, you realize that it is an incorrect focus that is causing them. All of the problems that I just mentioned were in relation to I and me. I have numbers I hope to get. I have expectations for how I should be perceived, but that is doing the craft an injustice. My job is to translate my message as I see it. What possibly else could be my role? It doesn't take long to see that comparison is a game that does not produce a winner. I can't control where it lands or who it's compatible with or who it isn't compatible with. My job is to play my role as best as I can, knowing that this is how the universe continues on. Vincent van Gogh, the Dutch Impressionist painter that is most famous for painting Starry Nights, died without making almost any money at all from his work. If I measure that to the way we all measure ourselves, it's easy to look at his life with pity. And in fact, that is almost always our thought. And that thought keeps us from going down the path of an artist. It certainly keeps many of our parents from encouraging us to go down that path. But what would become of the world if you took Van Gogh and all of the like away? See, beauty doesn't need to be validated. That's what makes it beauty. The appreciation of beauty is one of the things that make this life worth living. If you were to take all of the inspiration in the world away that was created by artists whose egos weren't validated in their lifetime, you would be left with a pretty drab place to live. And in fact, that's the place where we do live when we stop appreciating things for what they are and feel things are only what they are in relation to ourselves. The innate gift that we have, you know, I don't know what yours is, but you do, can't be subjected to the ego because they will never measure up. When we look at the world in relation to us, we're likely to play smaller. We're likely to hoard our gifts because we can't see a path to validation for them. And when that happens, the world is likely to suffer as a result. Pick one thing in nature and have that thing stop playing its part, and we would see quickly how things crumble. Remember that the size of a machine does not mean that you can discount any of its parts. Just 37 days after I was born, in only 73 seconds, all of America watched the Challenger spaceship blow up on live TV, all because they had the wrong O-ring that was not designed to handle extremely cold temperatures. Sometimes, the failure to play a part, however small, ends in absolute disaster. But the danger in our lives is when it doesn't, when we simply wake up every day and play a bit smaller than we should, when we hoard what we have out of fear. Our disaster can be stretched out over the course of a lifetime, not realized by us until it's far too late. If we start looking at this world as not entirely about us, we will become free to see what else is true. We will become free to experience things as they are, not as they are, in relation to us. It's possible that with that newfound freedom, we'll find ourselves playing a role that puts even ourselves in awe of what we get to be a part of. When we see that we aren't always the main character, we can put down the self-imposed pressure of carrying that role. Maybe the lesson you need isn't in surviving what others have done to you. Maybe it's in the recognition that you were once the bullet that someone else dodged. Maybe we'll only recognize our true potential if we measure that potential in servitude. I know that when I looked out from the altar at an entire group of loved ones crying during this wedding, I was struck because I knew they weren't crying because I made them. They were crying because even in a world such as this, where things don't work out and expectations fall short, it is deeply moving to be part of such beauty and love. The meaning was found solely in the appreciation. And for all that to be possible, all I had to do was play my part. That, at least, was my experience. I love you. We'll chat Monday on Morning Coffee. Hey everybody, thanks for tuning into the show. If you did like it, this show and every show is powered by the Clarity Academy. That is our in-house training program. It's a 12-week online course developed to help you figure out the right mindset to get exactly what you want out of life and to figure out who you really are, to figure out who you were before the world made you believe that you had to be somebody else. I think your best life and the way that you're best positioned to impact this world is found somewhere in your own authenticity, in your own uniqueness, and we just aren't taught how to double down on it. So if you're interested in that, you go to rickalexander.com, click on the Clarity Academy for details. Registration is open. I would love to see you on the inside.